Hello and welcome to ABW Radio Live. I am your host, Chris, and home or away, win or lose, Arsenal, this is your place, sorry, for your Arsenal views. Right, I am joined today in a bit of a rush and a bit of a panic station, so apologies for the slight dishevelment of the setup today, but luckily I had two people that were ready and willing to jump on and join me today.
Right,
so
I am joined today,
Carl, and somebody who hasn't muted, Carl, how dare you. I have Carl and I have Josh. Good afternoon, both of you.
Hello, happy new year, everyone.
Afternoon, guys. Yeah, happy new year. I've come into 2017 with a bit of a cold, but we'll get through it.
Man up. Yes. Yeah. Compliments of the season to everybody. I'm not a big New Year person, but I hope you had a lovely time and hope everybody is safe and well. Right. It's going to be sort of a bit of a whip through show today. So bear with us, but we're here for about sort of 45, 50 minutes or so. So we'll jump straight in. Carl, let's start with you then. Thoughts on the lineup and the performance in general today. 2-0 victory over Crystal Palace.
The lineup was kind of what I was expecting. Apart from Ozil, I thought Ozil would start, but obviously he's out with, I believe it's a cold. But when I saw the lineup, I thought that Alexis would play where it won't be played. I thought Alexis would play as the number 10 and Iwobi would play wide, because I kind of wanted to see how Giroud and Alexis would play as like the big man, little man, which was quite something I was looking forward to. But at the same time, Iwobi didn't disappoint in the number 10 role, and Alexis played brilliantly wide, and they couldn't really deal with us. So the lineup for me was kind of what I expected.
And overall, satisfied with the performance in general? I know it wasn't a barnstorming 90 minutes free for all, but it was fairly comfortable in the end, wasn't it?
Yeah, they didn't really test us, to be honest. Crystal Palace never really offered anything. I mean, they had like maybe a 5-minute spell in the second half where they had about 3 or 4 shots on goal within the space of about 2 minutes. And apart from that, that was the only thing they kind of really did in the game. They never offered anything going forward whatsoever. It was almost like they came knowing they were going to lose. I expected them to be a bit more defensively savvy, just because it's Big Sam. But I think because we got the early goal, or the early-ish goal, it forced them to have to kind of play out a little bit more. And that plays into Arsenal's hands. So at the end of the day, the early goal was quite good.
Yeah, sort of opened the play out a little bit, didn't it? Same question to you there, Josh. Any surprises for you in the lineup? Obviously, we saw Giroud keep his place, more on him at the moment. And again, comfortable performance, any sort of difference to what Carl said there?
Yeah, I agree with Carl. Big surprise to not see Ozil, but obviously again he's suffering with a cold, which I didn't give to him. Better add that in. But other than that, it was good to see Elneny start. We're obviously going to lose him for a couple of weeks now come the Africa Cup of Nations, so it's good to get the most out of him while we can, save someone like Rambo, who we're going to need for this month by, and then he's not here, to make sure he's still fit and firing during that window. But otherwise, yeah, Crystal Palace looked absolutely awful. And I thought Swansea played badly when we played them earlier in the season. Palace were up there as probably the worst team I've seen this season.
No ambition, really, was there? They were very sort of, yeah, for all that pace they got on the counter-attack, they didn't really seem to use it at all, which was nice. I appreciate them not doing that. It's a shame he couldn't beat Pardew. It would have been nice if he'd have stuck around for another week, but never mind. Can't have it all, can we? Let's go straight to that goal, shall we? Just get some thoughts on it, because it is probably what everybody is desperate to talk about, I would imagine. Fairly sort of cagey start, I guess. Nothing too much between the two sides. We had a lot of possession. And then that happened. What's your thoughts, Carl, first of all? Put it into words how you thought of that goal, what you thought of that goal.
From the get-go, the goal was very, very good. Lucas Perez cuts the ball out from it going wide, and I thought it was a brilliant interception. It's what we kind of really wanted from him. And the break was really, really quick. Lots of 1-2 touches. And when it goes wide to Alexis, there's only one person in the box they could aim for, because I think I can't remember who was behind it, but they were quite far. But the finish, the techers on that was just brilliant. I was literally on my phone in our WhatsApp group, and literally as that goal went in, I stood up. I don't really, sometimes when we score good goals, I don't really jump up and shout. But that made me actually stand up and shout, because I was like, oh my God, like the techers on it was just brilliant. And he meant that. Anyone who says he didn't mean that, go suck a dick. He meant that, absolutely. It was brilliant. The technique, the skill level, everything just involved in that goal was absolutely brilliant. I'm telling you this now, and I'm going to go on a limb, you're not going to see a better goal than that this season. You may see a few long-range strikes, but technical ability, you're not going to see something better than that, because that was brilliant. It was miles better than the Mkhitaryan goal. One, because it was off, the Mkhitaryan one was offside, but I understand what people will say, but for me, that Giroud goal was brilliant. He was two defenders, and anything that goes in off the crossbar, it makes it 10 times better anyway. So for me, the goal was just ridiculously good. Nothing else to say, but just brilliant.
Yeah, agreed. And Josh, echoes of a certain Swedish man at Old Trafford, because that was very Zlatan. I don't know if anyone's ever seen the goal he scored against, I think it's Toulouse, I think, from memory, for PSG last season, hooking it from behind him into the top of the net. Very, very similar style and execution. And I think what people maybe are not giving Giroud credit for, that's a bit harsh, but not picking up on, he's a big lad. I mean, that's some serious athleticism to be able to flick that from behind yourself. And it was the only way he could have got a shot on target. That was the other amazing thing. It wasn't like he just played for it. It was behind him. Just unbelievable goal. What did you make of it?
Yeah, I think Carl's exhausted all of the superlatives available to describe that goal. Yeah, it was absolutely fantastic. I do have a sneaking suspicion, after seeing Mkhitaryan do something similar earlier in the week, that they might have been practicing that in training, just in a bit of a take it to the side, see if they can replicate it. But just to pull it off in a game scenario, it's just absolutely fantastic. Yeah, I'm lost for words for that goal. Just absolutely incredible. And to see that level of flair from Giroud, it's not something we see that often. But he is involved in most of our great goals that have happened with him in the side. Thinking back to the flick for the Wilshere goal against Norwich, it's another time where he's shown that he has got that level of technical skill to pull something audacious off like that.
Agreed. Yeah, it's just one of those that is once in a blue moon, and when it comes along, you just have to look at it for what it is. Just a magnificent goal. For anybody that hasn't seen the Zlatan Ibrahimovic goal, and if you want to compare and contrast, I will tweet it in a moment. So yes, wonderful goal, put us on the right sort of path, if you will. At that stage, it was all a little bit kind of in the stadium and everybody around. It was all just a little bit, wow, what have we just seen there? And we had almost like 5 minutes off. Both teams, it seemed to be like, just okay, we'll just kind of play for a little bit and see how we get on, and just chill out for a little bit while we take in that goal. So it's an amazing thing to see. Carl, did you have any concerns, obviously, when we'd got that stunning goal? And I'm sure people will ask questions about it a bit later on as well. But the period of time that thereafter, any concerns, or were you sort of pleased the way we just controlled the game having been in front?
Six of one, half a dozen of the other. I wanted us to go for the jugular. I really wanted us to score a 3-4-5 today, just to prove that we can do it. You know, there's never going to be a better time to do it against quite a shit Palace team at home. We was in control of the whole game. They never challenged us going forward at all. So I kind of wanted us to put our stamp on it. I really wanted us to go out there and score quite a few goals. And sometimes I think the killer instinct within Arsenal is kind of missing sometimes. I'm happy that we controlled the game and it was nothing that really tested us today with the Crystal Palace squad, because they never really showed up. But I think for us to sort of put a marker down, and for other teams and other people to start considering us as real title contenders, I think we should have gone out there and put 3, 4, or 5 goals past them. I mean, we did it against West Ham, but to the best of my knowledge, we haven't done it again. And for me, there's no better time when you're at home, in control of a game, no threat at all, because they never offered us anything. I think we should have really sort of put a marker down.
Yeah, agreed. As you say, layer marker. I just very quickly going back to that goal as well. Just something I didn't realise because I had to watch the game on my phone, which I bloody hate doing. But having seen a couple of bits back, the build-up was pretty tasty as well, wasn't it? Really good interchanging of passes from the edge of our own box. I think it's Bellerin starts it into midfield, a little flick. I think it's Giroud who actually starts the flick in the centre circle and then bombs on to finish off Alexis's cross. So it's a nice bit of football that as well. So full credit where due. Yeah, I'm sure we'll be seeing that one shown many, many times over. Josh, any sort of worries from your standpoint in that first half after we got in front? Similar question to Carl. I mean, how do you prefer Arsenal to see out games? Well, I say see out halves maybe. Would you prefer for us to sort of do the thing we did against Chelsea where you just try and put them out of sight quickly? Or are you comfortable knowing that we're secure enough to hold a one goal lead till the break and then go again?
I think the way that we've been playing this season, I would have hoped to have got a couple more goals kind of in the bag before we'd gone in for half time, just to really make sure that Palace were well and truly gone, because they were, you know, chasing shadows come the 30th minute. We were really, really penetrating them. And they were playing with a back six at times, with Zaha and Townsend having to double up on our fullbacks. And when's the last time that we've seen that, especially with Monreal having to be doubled up on?
I think Josh has been murdered. Say that again, Josh.
Oh, sorry. Where did I cut out?
Just say that half sentence again.
Just where Monreal... Oh, I've forgotten what I'm saying now.
Go back to where you were. It's all good. The control. You'd rather see us go for you know, more goals quicker than sit on what we've got, essentially, yeah?
Yeah, absolutely. Especially before half time, just to make sure we don't get that similar situation we have against Man City, where they come out all guns blazing and just do us very quickly and just put us on the back foot almost immediately. I'd rather we come into the second half where we can relax a little bit more and just go about our business.
Yeah. You're never quite sure with us, are you? Just never quite sure, even at 1-0 and playing a side that were really poor at times. But moving into the second half, I'll give you a couple of stats actually from the game. I'm sure Danny likes a bit of stats. 59% possession, 8 corners to 4, which is too short of what I needed. 11 shots on target to 5, 9 shots wide to 2 Palace's 4, 9 fouls to 7, 2 offsides to 3. So pretty unanimous stats in Arsenal's favour. Second goal, Carl, arrived fairly soon after the restart, 56 minutes. Man who's copped a lot of flack recently, completely unfairly in my opinion, Alex Iwobi, reacting quickest to head the ball in via, I think it was Stephen Ward tried to head it over the bar and just ended up putting it into his own net. I think it's definitely Iwobi's goal. Pleased to see the sort of speed of reaction, because we had a few moments in that game where we didn't react quickly, didn't we? So it's nice to see him on the spot to be able to turn that home.
Yeah, it was good. I don't think I've ever seen Iwobi score a headed goal. So he was very, very good. The reaction of the Palace players was almost like they've given up. They had two men on the line and both the two men couldn't keep it out. So that just shows you kind of how really poor they are. It was a very good header as well. I don't think he would get the credit for that header, because he literally had to loop it over the goalkeeper and the two men on the line, which is not very easy. It's quite hard. So he should get a lot of more credit than he will do. I don't really agree with you to say that the flak that he's getting is unjustified, just because I was one of the ones who think that he should have been taken out of the firing line for a little bit, just because I don't think he has been playing as well. And I know we're making allowances for him to say, oh, because he's young and he's inexperienced a little bit. But I just think, just for that reason, he should have, you know, been taken out the firing line. But hey, what do I know? Because look at what he's done today. So absolutely brilliant. But he hasn't been playing badly. He just hasn't been playing as well, not even to our expectations, just as well as he should do. Just the tracking back thing. I know we say, oh, he's young, he'll learn, but for me, as a footballer, you should know that if your team's in trouble, you got to track back and help out your defence. But today, I think he played very, very well. It was brilliant. He lasted more than his normal 60 minutes. So credit goes to Iwobi. Definitely today, he put in a brilliant performance. He shut all us critics up to say, look, what I can actually do. So credit goes to you. Your hat's off to you, Iwobi. You've done well.
Yeah, absolutely. I agree with that. And yeah, I think, you know, it's fair to say he's not been tearing up trees of late, but I'm just one of those. Maybe I'm a bit soft in my old age, but I'd rather see a young player keep playing, play through the spells where he's not quite at it and work his way in, because I just we'll come on to the other options available, but I think he's one of the best options we've got in those positions in midfield. But the sort of 2-0 comfort was there, Josh, once we got that second goal. It sounds silly to be critical, because I'm not trying to be critical, but any sort of issue with you that we didn't then push on to take Palace apart? Because it looked to me like at 2-0 that early on, if we wanted more goals, we could have had them. I know they had a 5-minute spell where they threatened a little bit, but I mean, we could have done what Spurs did earlier on in the day, but let's not mention them. But any sort of any disappointments that we didn't force home the advantage and really rack up the goals?
Yeah, there was that spell around 60 minutes where there was a succession of corners from Crystal Palace that looked to trouble us. I think most of that trouble was of our own making rather than Palace doing anything special. Alexis Sanchez being adamant that he can dribble it out from basically next to Petr Cech, when really just a long ball forward up to Olivier Giroud, which we can play, especially at that time with a big man up front, would just relieve the pressure a little bit so we can regroup and probably break on them again to get another goal. But after that, we then moved into kind of killing the game with the subs coming about 10 minutes later with, Elneny and Lucas coming off. I don't think there was anything more to that. Just on Iwobi as well. I agree. He had an absolutely fantastic game. We looked very balanced in our attack, something that I haven't seen for a while from us. Whether or not that's got anything to do with Mesut Ozil not being in the side, I'm not so sure. But they've just seen something about us today that we were very balanced in the attack.
We should touch on that, actually. Just before we do, I got a quote from Arsene Wenger here on that Giroud goal. He says, you cannot practice that in training. So screw you, Josh. it's just a reflex. Any goal scorer is ready to use any part of his body. I suppose we could touch on it now, really, couldn't we? There's a couple of things I want to just speak about on individual player performances. It's two starts only this season for Giroud. And obviously, you know, he's getting goals and there's talks of a new contract. Obviously, he'd like to play more. But the thing I really like about the last two performances that he's started is he's affected games. I know there'll be people out there will say, oh, he also missed a sitter. Well, I didn't see Sergio Aguero have one of his best games yesterday. So it happens to the best of them. But he's started two games. He's got two goals. He's affected the play. And it hasn't massively affected Alexis's performances either. I didn't think he was great today, but his work rate's still there. He still gets central. Is that something, Carl, you've noticed in that even when Giroud's playing as an out-and-out front man, which he clearly is, the three behind him are still getting up? There's still times where we've got a speedy centre-forward and Giroud just drifts wide slightly. Do you think that's what Arsene Wenger's trying to do, that kind of rotation of those front three?
I have a bit of a problem when I love when Giroud plays, just because he gives us a different option and teams cannot handle him. You know, he's not the fastest player, so you're not going to put a ball onto the ground and let him run onto it. But when the ball's in the air, or like today, those little flicks, teams cannot handle him because he's big and he's strong and he uses his body. What I've noticed, the change in Giroud, that, do you remember maybe a couple of seasons ago that he used to, when he gets pushed on the floor, he would moan, throw his hands up in the air. You don't really see that from him anymore. I don't know if you've noticed, but he doesn't do that anymore. And that's a Giroud like. He just gets on with the game. Yes, he still will have maybe sometimes if it's a really bad foul, but not anymore. He doesn't like the little fouls where you just think, oh, just get up and get on with the game. He just does that now. And that's what I've seen that change. I don't know if someone's had a word of him or he's just seen it himself and think, you know, I'm just going to get on with it. Because it's absolutely crucial, because you can't, if a team sees that you're affected, they're going to keep on doing that to you. And if they can affect you like that, they're just going to keep on little niggles, little kicks out. And once you start moaning, that's in your head. Now he doesn't do that, which is great.
Yeah.
Giroud tends to come back a lot. And obviously, if he's being man-marked, he's dragging defenders with him. So if he's going back into the midfield, it leaves a space for the likes of Iwobi or Alexis or another to run into that space. So that's the kind of thing that I really like when Giroud plays. At the same time, I want my centre forwards to play centre forward. Again, there was a number of times today when the ball went forward and there's no one in the box and you're thinking, where's the striker? Where's the person that we want to run onto? Because sometimes Giroud's got the ball and you're thinking, okay, you've got the ball there. There's no one ahead of you. Who are you going to pass to? And yes, we can say, yes, Alexis, Iwobi, and Lucas should run into those spaces. But if they're in their positions, then it's like, what happens then? But again, not to be negative, I'll say that Giroud, for me, I feel that his game has changed a little bit. And when he does drag people out, it's brilliant because, like I said, other people can run into the spaces. And if people run into the space, it creates more goals.
Yeah. Yeah, well said. Well said. Some good points there. And Josh, do you sort of subscribe to the idea that, I mean, you know, everyone is talking about how good Chelsea are with, you know, with basically one striker. Spurs, as much as I, you know, I don't want to give them any credit, they've got a half decent striker, nothing more, by the way. I think I'd have scored against Watford today. But, Man City obviously have got Aguero, Liverpool arguably. I suppose they've got a couple, but none of them are really top-level quality, I don't think, as out-and-out centre-forwards. So isn't it a good thing that we've got two very different types of centre-forwards, but two centre-forwards that are of a level that affect games every time they play?
Yeah, absolutely. I think we said before that Giroud is in that echelon of striker that's just below world-class. He's probably the best player that does what he does. If you know what I mean, that kind of big player that's going to knock the defenders around, win headers and general build-up play. Maybe a case for Zlatan to come into that, but I think he is that level above. That's the only guy that's probably above him in terms of style of play. And yeah, ironically, I think that's the only other team that's got a decent reserve striker on them, and you can see where they are in the table. Other than that, with the options we've now got, it's something we've been crying out for. The only thing that's getting on my nerves at the moment, with a number of balls that went across Crystal Palace's six-yard box when no one was on the end of them. Giroud had it in probably the first 5 minutes where he missed it and Lucas was behind him. But then when the Ox came on, he was absolutely destroying Ward down the side. And easily should have been 3-0 at that point when he's putting balls across the six-yard box. And I think that's where we would have got our scoreline that would have been more realistic, that kind of 4 or 5 would have been just from those moments alone with tap-ins.
Yeah, I think that's again fair points. Like you say, I think we are one of the few sides that have got two genuinely different striking options that are ready to be in, and able to perform week in, week out if you need them, and that is quite rare. Carl, you wanted to talk about Granit Xhaka as well, who had a quietly very decent game today. You know, nothing sort of mind-boggling that you'd look at and go, oh, that's incredible, but some good long-range passing that we usually expect from him. He read the game well, was quite energetic, got himself in there with tackles, protected that back four. He was pretty decent today, wasn't he?
I thought it was man of the match today. I'll be really honest. I thought he was really good. That is the performance that I think everyone's been waiting for. And I don't want people to say, oh, it was against Palace, they're rubbish. No. He was brilliant. Okay, not brilliant, but I thought he was very, very good today. He was up and down the pitch. His passing was absolutely up there today. I'm not sure of his stats, but he had some really, really good passes. There was one ball that he threaded through, I think it was to Giroud. I think it went through about five people. It was just... It was a brilliant pass, and I love when people do that because the simple things that he does really, really well. And that's the performance that I've personally been waiting for because people have spoken about him coming with his big reputation. He was very, very good in Gladbach. So I've been waiting for him to sort of show the performance, and today I think he's done it. I think his passing was brilliantly... his passing was very, very good. His tackling was very, very good. I think he didn't do anything bad in the game. And from the fact that I can't remember him doing anything bad in the game, I think that's really, really good. So for me, he was our man of the match because he just controlled that midfield as well. Him and El Nene just brilliant. They were all over the pitch as well. So for me, definitely, I think Xhaka was our man of the match.
Yeah, fair point. So I thought a word for Anna now. I thought he was quietly very decent as well today. I know he didn't have a huge amount to do, but I thought he was very steady and secure in that midfield area as well. I'd like to see Xhaka and Coquelin continued with, maybe just the two roles swapped around. I know a lot of people are having this sort of issue with Coquelin playing higher up the pitch at the moment. I've got to be honest, I do get a little bit tired of people, I'll be polite, people maybe not quite understanding football to a degree, where they sort of say, oh, well, he's playing too high. Yes, he's playing too high because the manager has asked him to play that high. It's not like, you know, you see a lot of people on Twitter at the moment in particular just saying, oh, why is he playing too high? He's crap further forward, blah, 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 blah. He's obviously being told to play higher. It's not just the player going into business for himself. I'd quite like to see those roles reversed, and rather than trying to replace Santi Cazorla, which we're never going to do realistically, I'd like to just change the system slightly and just play with, rather than two holding mids, just play with sort of one out and out holding midfielder with one sort of creative ball carrying midfielder in front, and that would probably be Coquelin behind and Xhaka in front for me. So it'd be interesting to see if that does happen or not. We have to take into consideration, again, it was Crystal Palace today, not to take anything away from the performance, but you know, has to be caveated slightly. Josh, what did you make of Hector Bellerin today? Because he's taken a while to get back to speed. He's sporting the, how is it you described it, the haircut of a man who's just found himself in Singapore for 3 weeks and has come back with a rather suspicious looking Barnet. But he looked back to his somewhere near his best today. Quick, intercepting the ball well, getting down those flanks. Good in the tackle. Back to his best, do you think?
Yeah, definitely offensively. I don't think we can judge Hector Bellerin being back fully on his defensive performance, because he didn't really have to do any today. There wasn't a lot of threat from that side of the pitch, to be honest. Yeah, I think he was quietly going about business. I think Monreal was absolutely superb, talking about defenders and wing backs. Monreal was absolutely brilliant. I think we were aided, especially Xhaka's performance was aided by one Andre Mariner, who was letting quite a few things go, especially on Wilfried Zaha, who does have a penchant for going over a little too easily. So I think overall we were benefited from that slightly more combative role and style that we'd taken today, especially with our midfield.
Yeah, I think that's again, I think that's fair points. You know, he's not, I don't think he's ever going to be Lee Dixon in the tackle, is he? Let's be honest. But the modern day fullback dictates that you need to be better going forwards than you do necessarily being a hard crunching challenge right back. So you know, I'll take it. I'll take it as his performances at the moment are getting to a level. And fair play for mentioning Monreal, who's once again recently this season taken a lot of very unfair stick, in my opinion. Again, back to a high level today. Carl, let's just talk a little bit about Lucas Perez. Obviously, he got the start today. We got slightly different views on this one, haven't we? I think you thought he was pretty good throughout. I thought he had good moments. I just felt he drifted out of the game for long periods, and I didn't think playing on the right-hand side. I do understand that Arsene Wenger is very good at bringing in players in one position and transitioning them into another. I'm not so sure about taking a player who started as a wide forward into a centre forward, back to a wide forward, is really what I want, particularly in, you know, given the fact we signed him as a centre forward. What you personally liked how he performed today, though, in your opinion, on that right side?
I mean, I just want to agree with you. Yeah, if we signed him as a centre-forward, then I think we should play him as a centre-forward. That makes me think that Arsene Wenger didn't sign him as a centre-forward because he hasn't really played there. So at the same time, it's a bit annoying that he's not playing up front. But for me today, I think he played well. I mean, he was the reason why, okay, not the sole reason, but he started the move for Giroud's goal. He's the one that cut out the interception. And played the ball to Bellerin, who played it forward. So I think he played quite well. I think he did get back to help out Bellerin. Yes, he did give the ball away a little bit, and that was frustrating. But for me, for what he did and how he performed, I can't say that he performed badly. I'm not saying that he performed badly, but I would give him credit where credit is due. And I think he played well today. And would I start him against Bournemouth? Probably not, because it's going to be a different type of game. But I don't think he was bad today. And I think he done the things that we want from him. He done them quite well. So would I start him over, say, Chamberlain on wide? No. But would I rotate him and Giroud and also Alexis? Yes, I would give him a chance. I mean, I've got no doubt he's going to start against Preston. And I think he'll probably start up front more than likely, because I want to see what he could do as a centre forward. But I don't think he had a bad game today. I think he played quite well.
Yeah, agreed. I think it's... I think it's almost like what Arsene Wenger does typically with forwards when he brings them in. He likes to play them wide initially to get them sort of acclimatized to the speed and the position, I guess, and the tactical awareness of playing in a different league, and then eventually moving through the middle. I think that's my only concern, is that, you know, he was bought as a sort of a last minute kind of deal by the looks of it, even though we'd obviously scouted him. And I just feel like, I don't know, I just feel like we're not maybe seeing the best of him yet, but the best will come. And it's just going to take time. And like you, I wouldn't be starting him over Iwobi or Oxlade-Chamberlain or Walcott personally at the moment. I'd be rather happier with him as a centre forward. Josh, just kind of going back a level, I just noticed that you popped something in the chat there. You just wanted to mention something on that midfield two positioning wise again. I think it's to do with Coquelin. Did you want to just make that point now?
Yeah, it was just mainly about when Cock came on initially. He kind of regressed back into the role that we've seen him playing higher up the pitch. That was about in the 80th minute. If you then watch carefully in the 84th minute, you see him change his role. And he goes back into where we saw Coquelin last season, which is where we want him for a game like this. We don't need him breaking up interceptions higher up the field, because we saw for, well, 80 minutes beforehand, Crystal Palace just couldn't string a ball out from the back. So we knew that we weren't going to gain anything from breaking up the play high up the pitch. So that's where we saw him drop back, sit in front of the back two, because obviously Bellerin and Monreal had gone off upfield. And then we looked a lot more comfortable in the last 10 minutes of the game. I think that's just the only point I want to add on Cock. It's just watch his positioning after he came on, and then look to where he ended up and finished the game, because it was an instruction to tell him to move back.
Yeah, I did notice that. I must admit, he seemed to play deeper, didn't he? As soon as he entered the field, he seemed to go into a deep position. So, yeah, no, I'm with you on that one. Just also want to ask you, I'll ask you both on this one, because it'd be interesting to see if you both have the same opinion. Shokran Mustafi was back on the bench today, which suggests to me that he's probably fit enough to come back in for Bournemouth. Would you be automatically putting him in ahead of Gabriel? Carl, let's start with you.
Against Bournemouth? Yes, I would. I would try and get that partnership back, because the longer you kind of leave it, the longer maybe it takes to gel. So I would definitely be starting him against Bournemouth.
And Josh?
No, I wouldn't. I think Gabriel will play against Preston, which is a couple of days. Well, it's on the 7th. So at that point, I think we're resting Koscielny. It then gives, after Bournemouth, Mustafi and Koscielny 11 days on the training field to then get together and re-drill themselves, because we're not going to play the same back five that played today, or the same back five we've seen earlier in the season with Mustafi back in it against Preston. So there's more than enough time on the training field to get back into it and make sure they're drilled properly.
See, for my money, I'm with Carl on this one. I have to say, I would be looking to bring Mustafi in for Bournemouth and then rest him again for Preston. So give him the one game and then the other period of time off. Bournemouth on an evening kickoff under the lights, lots of pace in their front attacking end of things. Stanislas, young Fraser seems to be doing all right. Josh King's pretty quick. I would rather have the Koscielny Mustafi partnership back than Gabriel personally. You know, it's nothing against Gabriel per se. I just don't think he's as good a defender as Mustafi. And again, today, yes, we got a clean sheet, but I think realistically, I think us three could have played at the back and probably held out for a clean sheet against Palace because they didn't really offer anything at any period of time. So
I think you're right in what you say, because that Bournemouth game is not going to be as easy as people think. They got quite a good forward line. And you're right what you say, they are quite pacey. So that's, another reason why I think I would definitely bring Mustafi back in, because that Bournemouth game is not going to be an easy 3 points in the slightest.
Agreed. And very good fullbacks, Bournemouth, as well. They'll push our fullbacks back, I think, for long periods, which obviously doesn't help. The one thing that we might get some joy at is that Bournemouth only really play one way, and that is high pressing, full of energy. They take the game to the opposition. It doesn't matter who plays them at that stadium. They just go for them. And that actually might help us kind of spring out, which is why I'd probably, if I had to put myself in the manager's seat, I would probably be looking to bring Alexis back into the centre of the forward position for this one, which will be harsh on Giroud, no doubt, but I think the pace is the way to go to face Bournemouth, and then I would probably play Giroud again on Saturday or Sunday, whenever it is, against Preston. So yeah, that would be an interesting one to keep an eye on.
Back to Bournemouth, just looking at the previous game we had against them earlier in the season when we won 3-1, I think the main thing that was helping Bournemouth's attack this season is Jack Wilshere, and obviously he's going to be missing, helping string that back line together, or that forward line together. They're going to be looking at a more utilitarian player, a less flair player, and someone like probably Harry Arter or Smith playing that position instead. So I think, because we beat them 3-1 and they only beat us with a lucky penalty from Brightley, from Callum Wilson, I don't think we need to be that concerned about their forward line. Obviously, we're going to be playing them away. It's a nice narrow pitch they've got up there and a very tight ground, but there's only 11,000 people there. They're not going to be, it's not like us going somewhere like Besiktas and them screaming the doors down and the players are going to get frightened. This should just be a routine win.
I think we need something to worry about the level of recovery time. It's only one day. Bournemouth have had an extra day. So I think that's going to be, I know people will say they're professional athletes, but that's going to be a big factor of why Alexis played the whole 90 minutes today. I have no idea, because you know he's going to play again on Tuesday. I think the recovery time is, I think the recovery time is going to play a lot into the hands of who starts. I think Ox will probably come in, but for me, you know, we'll probably talk about this later, or maybe we can talk about it now. Why does Alexis need to play the whole 90 minutes all the time? Why the game was kind of won after 2-0? Why is Alexis staying on the pitch when you know we've got a game 2 days later and he's one of our best players? You'd think that you'd take him off, even if it's 10, 20 minutes into the game, just to make him recover. That, for me, is one of the frustrating things about us having substitutions, because why is that not in his head?
I've got a theory on this, and it would be very interesting to know what Dom thought about this. I haven't managed to catch up on the podcast this week, but I doubt it's brought up, but you never know. The theory on Alexis playing minutes, I think it's down to him and his body type. If you look at how he was at, you know, obviously Barcelona under the wonderful Pep Guardiola, couldn't resist. He was often taken off in that game in their team and substituted on a fairly regular basis. And Guardiola always used to say, you know, I have to protect him from himself. And he was less effectual, I think, over long periods of time when he was missing games and left out of sides. Dom's in the chat room. Interesting. So, Dom, you can tell me about this. But I just wonder if maybe he's one of those players or has one of those athletic builds, if you will, that he's better the more minutes he plays. Of course, yeah, everybody will suffer from burnout eventually, but maybe he's one of those players that genuinely doesn't need to rest, and that his body recovers a lot quicker, and that he just needs to keep the wheels greased, if you will, and just needs to keep playing games. He obviously trains at 100 miles an hour as well. I just wonder if maybe that's the way. Different metabolisms, different muscle groups, all sorts of things, I guess, come into it. But I just wonder if that's the case. Some players, you can rest.
Surely he's still human and he still needs a rest and he still needs recovery time. And you're thinking to yourself, he just played 90 minutes. He played 90 minutes. What? When did he play? Boxing Day, wasn't it? Yeah.
Yeah.
He's played 90 minutes today and he's more than likely going to play 90 minutes again. You're hoping that he can just get some sort of recovery time and take him off. And I understand what you're saying. I truly do. But it goes into the point where you're risking him getting injured because you know what he's like. He's going to keep running up and down. And the game was won. Once we were 2-0 up, Crystal Palace were not going to come back. I don't think they're going to come back from 1-0, to be honest. But I just, things like that play into my mind. I just think, take him off, wrap him up in cotton wool. Yes, I understand that he just wants to play all the time and wants to run around like a Tasmanian devil. I get that. I really do. But surely, as the manager, he got to say to Alexis, okay, the game's now won. I'm going to take you off because I want you to rest. Just sit down and rest, because surely they're going to train tomorrow or do very light training tomorrow. And then it's an even kickoff, so they'll probably go down on a train to Bournemouth, or will they fly? They'll probably fly because they fly everywhere, don't they?
Yeah.
But so your body then, his body's not going to have time to recover. So, and that goes for all the players, not just him. I'm talking about all the players. I know you can't take 11 players off. It's just stupid. But for someone who is such important to us and such so influential for us, you're thinking that people like him and Ozil, I know he didn't play today, but if he did, you would take him off because just to give him time to recover.
Yeah, it is a tough one. I don't think he'll play against Preston. That's one thing I would say. I think he probably will be left out of that. I think he missed the League Cup ties for memory as well. And I remember when he got injured at the stage of the season last year when it was Norwich away, November last year, I think he got injured. I think Arsene Wenger has learnt from that. And also the other thing, yes, he does go for long periods of the game where he is, you know, racing around trying to win the ball back. But if you actually, I'll be honest, I'm not geeky enough for this, but I would be interested to get somebody to watch him. Like, you remember the old Sky player cams where they followed a player around? I wonder if he's actually a bit more intelligent than people give him credit for, in that he only goes and presses the ball when he thinks there's a chance he's going to score or win the ball back, you know, to set somebody up. It's not like he just races around like a headless chicken, which I think a lot of people seem to think he does. So I wonder if maybe he's actually doing it himself and pacing himself and only running, because some people even say that, yes, his work rate's brilliant, but sometimes he gives the ball away and then gives up. Or maybe that's his way of saying, okay, well, I've done my bit now. Somebody else needs to win the ball back. So it's a tough one. I just hope he doesn't get injured. Go on, Josh.
He was certainly slowing the play down towards the end today. The other thing I would add to that whole point, we did have a 8-day rest day before the Boxing Day fixture, and then we've got a 10-day rest day for the first team after the next fixture.
Yep.
So although they are all bunched up together, he has had a rest beforehand, and I would expect any professional athlete with those two rest periods either side to be able to go through those three games in that succession.
Yeah, I agree.
We may see come the end of the Bournemouth game him get mentally jaded, but I'd expect us to have won it by that period.
And we could also probably argue again, I know it's not about other teams, but how many times do Man City rest Kevin De Bruyne? You know, how many times do Man United rest Pogba? How many times do Chelsea rest Hazard? You know, it doesn't, very rarely see them taken off in games either. So maybe it's just that we see it because it's our team, rather than looking around at other teams and thinking, well, they do probably the same thing. But it's definitely one to sort of keep an eye on. Let's just hope. We haven't really had too many serious injuries, have we, this season so far? Touch wood.
Oh, thank you very much, Chris. That's it.
Sorry.
Fuck's sake, Chris.
I'm in a practically wooden room, so hopefully we'll be all right when I say that. But yeah, touch wood, it's been all right so far. So let's just hope it carries on that way. So expect them all to be banned, Jackson, in a week. Okay, not a lot else to add to the show, other than obviously we'll take some questions in a second. There's not much else to add to the game, I should say, today. The only other thing we should touch on is obviously the league table. I was a little bit naughty in a tweet I put up last night, but once again, the saviour of world football finds his team third in the league now. Fourth in the league now, as we go up to third. In fact, no, they're fifth, aren't they? Oh, hilarious. First time in so many years that Man City have lost three games in a month, I think somebody said. Wow. So they're down to fifth now. Man United have all of a sudden woken up, and they've won quite a few games on the spin. And we've seen that lot down the road. They beat Watford. I mean, come on, let's be fair. I'll get both your thoughts on this. Who are you looking at the moment? Are you looking at what's above us, or are you more looking at us keeping on winning to avoid what's behind us. I know that's an interesting way of looking at it. Josh, which side of the fence do you fall on?
I'm looking at Arsenal, to be honest. The run we've got in January is really favourable. We play Bournemouth next week, on Tuesday. We then got Swansea, Burnley and Watford before we then play Chelsea in February. I expect us to come out with winning every single game in January, and whatever happens there, that's where I expect us to, that's basically what I expect us to do. And whatever position we end up in after winning all our games in January, I'll be happy with it because we've done what we need to do. I expect to be ahead of Liverpool by that point. Chelsea, probably not. I think they will stumble up in January, but I think we might have to go and show everyone else how it's done again come February, like we have to do last season with Leicester, and beat the people who are running away with the league.
Yeah, fair point. Same question to you, Carl. Are you looking at Arsenal or are you looking around us?
You always got to look forwards, not backwards. I don't really care what's behind us because they've got to catch us first. And there's nothing we can do about the people behind us. We got to concentrate on people ahead of us. So I am looking at the Chelseas and I'm looking at the Liverpools. For me, we've got to aim for Chelsea. I said this before and I said it again, I think Chelsea will win the league just because I think they're playing brilliant football. And love or hate them, and I hate Chelsea with a passion, I really, truly, truly, truly do. But their football at the moment, no one can't deny, it is very, very good football. And they're not blowing teams away because they're getting a few 1-0 victories. I mean, against Stoke gave them a very, very good game yesterday. And it's only because Stoke couldn't hold out, unfortunately. But at the same time, you can't deny just how good they are at the moment. And I hate giving them credit. I really, really do, because I can't stand Chelsea. But you have to give credit where credit's due. They're doing well. And it's just hopeful at the moment that they can drop some points. Because my thing is, I don't want to beat our 14-game winning streak. And luckily, it's against that lot up the road. And I'm hoping that lot up the road are going to do us a favour. And if not beat them, draw against them, it's not going to be an easy game for Chelsea. Pochettino knows how to... I hope they don't capitulate, like they did last season. So, Chelsea at the moment, I think they're playing brilliant football. I said this before, one game a week, no European football, maximum recovery time. I think that is so important. It really, really is. I personally wouldn't want that for Arsenal because I'd rather be in Europe. But Chelsea are the team at the moment who... they look unstoppable. They're not unstoppable, but they look unstoppable.
Yeah, I tell you what will be very interesting is if Chelsea do suffer a defeat, how they'll not react, because I fully expect them to react to it, but whether they will have the Man City effect, because obviously, you know, as soon as Man City's invincibility cloak slipped off in September and after all their fans had finished celebrating the league they'd already won, idiots, I do just wonder if that's, you know, whether they will be able to recover from the loss, because it is all fine when you're winning games. Basically, you just turn up and win. I mean, yesterday, you know, I thought Stoke were more than good enough to take a point. And then, as you say, they just steamrolled them and got those two other goals, and that was that. So, yeah, I'd be interested to see how they react. I do think they'll lose at Spurs, weirdly. Everything that went on last season, all that jazz. Fairly good money on a red card in that game. Fairly good money on lots of fouls. But I do have this funny feeling. It's under the lights, isn't it, as well? It's an evening game. So, Yeah, I do have a funny feeling they might win that, which makes our game with Bournemouth even more important. So, yeah, we need to get our house in order and then watch what everybody else does around us. Let's have a couple of questions then to finish. We're not really going to do transfery stuff because it's just pointless, really. Let's start with our friend Mike Gunas in USA. Is Ozil really suffering from... Hang on, it's just moved up. Is he really suffering from flu or is he hungover? I think he's Muslim, isn't he? So I'd be very surprised if he's hungover. I don't think he is even ill today. I think he was just completely rested, personally. It's a very classic Wenger move. Same with Theo Walcott. I don't think there's any way in the world Theo Walcott is injured. So I think he's just rested. I would expect both of them to be back against Bournemouth. In fact, I'd expect Walcott to be back on the bench at Bournemouth and Oxlade-Chamberlain promoted to a start. And I'd expect Ozil to be back in the starting lineup, personally. So that's that one. Mubin, I've got a question. How are your new year celebrations? well, mine were pointless because I don't believe in it and it's all a load of bollocks to me. So I did nothing. Did either of you do anything exciting?
I went to Bristol. It was all right. I just know that I can't drink anymore because these kids can't handle their drinks and I can't stand. I hate kids nowadays that they can't handle their drink. It's just very, very silly. Although, Bristol girls, thumbs up to you lot. Seriously, Bristol girls, I don't know what you lot drink, but yes.
it's Blackthorn. That's what it is.
It is just Blackthorn, yeah. Can you hear that? That is the sound of John Welsh immediately firing up his car in a race to Bristol as we speak. A stolen car, as he hasn't got one, he's just stolen one to get to Bristol. Yes, yeah, fair play. They don't come as far as Plymouth, I have to say.
Oh dear.
Here's one, I'll give this one to you, Josh. Our good friend Bavia, let's be realistic, Chelsea won't bottle it, would they? I don't think, I'm with Carl, I think they'll win the league personally, if it's not us, of course. But do you agree with that, Josh? You can't see them bottling it, can you?
I thought they'd win the league before the season started, so I wouldn't be surprised if they did. I know what Conte's like, he's just going to grind this out. Probably in a slightly more exciting way than Mourinho grinds out a title win, but he will grind it out for sure.
Yeah, I tend to agree, sadly. But you never know. You never know. Things can change very quickly. A couple of injuries or a couple of assassinations and it could all be all right. Did I say that out loud? Shit. Allegedly. Josh, Klukas, Kakluskas, always get that wrong. Sami Nasri getting hacked on Twitter, hilarious or just sad at this point? Can I answer that one? Anything Sami Nasri tweets is usually pointless, but that was particularly amusing. It's a real shame because he's such a talent, but he comes from the school of Hatem Ben Arfa and Karim Benzema and who else can I think of? Remy Kabela,
Frank Ribery.
It's the Clairefontaine school of Bellendery that they come through that academy. Unfortunately, a lot of that kind of era of players are just knobs. And, you know, I love the French league, but it would be fair to say that some French players are... well, let's just say not the most sensible when it comes to how they conduct themselves in their careers and often overrate themselves slightly. So that is a shame. But nevertheless, it was quite funny, wasn't it? And I'm sorry, those people who do that drip, they are blatantly porn stars, aren't they? Absolutely.
Of course, definitely.
Good grief. How many of you, Bavia, are you asking? Bavia's trying to replace our manager again, just for a change. New year, same old stuff. How many of you would like Allegri? Well, I'll answer this myself and then give it to you guys. Couldn't give a toss because we've got a manager. I'm quite happy with him. So that's my thoughts. Do either of you have a view on Allegri or have anything you want to mention on that?
Until we know what's happening with Arsene Wenger, it's pointless talking about replacement managers. Until that day and Arsene Wenger says, I'm leaving or I'm staying, it's pointless. We all know that Arsene Wenger is the one who decides whether he stays or goes. So until he says what he's doing, manager talk is kind of pointless.
Yep, I agree. You got anything different on that, Josh?
Yeah, I'll at least tune the question and say, yes, I would like Allegri to come in, but not now because we've got Arsene Wenger and he's doing very well at the moment. And I think it will probably be a couple of years until he leaves. But if Allegri is the man that comes in to eventually replace him, I wouldn't grumble too much.
Yes, I think that sums up where I am, I think. And as you say, until we don't have a manager, it's kind of a moot point to suggest who we could get. But yeah, be interesting to see. With all the news that Arsenal apparently offered a contract to Cohen Brumhall. Is he a championship man, Josh? Don't recognise that name.
No, is he in our youth? Very strange for anyone to have
a
surname and not to pick up on him.
Yeah, I shall have to look up this gentleman. Does the panel think Gibbs or Jenkinson will be sold while I look up this question? Carl, do you think either? I do think one of them will be gone quite soon.
I think Jenkinson will go on loan this January transfer window. It depends on what happened with Monreal, whether he stays or goes, as whether I think Gibbs stays or goes, because Gibbs needs to get into the first team. Surely he must be knocking on a manager's door saying, what's going on with me? Because he's gone from being a backup to was practically our first choice now to backup. And it doesn't seem like he's, I don't know, he might be behind closed doors, knocking on Arsene Wenger's door saying, I want games, but he hasn't really come out, or there's been no sort of stories leaked about him coming out saying that he wants more games like the Ox. The Ox has obviously leaked to some sort of paper to say that he wants more games. But I think when Gibbs is given his chance, he doesn't always take it. It's brilliant for him to come on with the last 20 minutes to sort of help the left sides. That's really good. But surely at his age, he wants to be playing week in, week out. He's got to be wanted to play week in, week out. So Jenkinson will go. Gibbs, at the end of the season, depending, I think, what happens with Monreal, whether we upgrade our left-back position is whether I think he goes or not.
Yeah, I kind of agree with that. I do think that I think both will be gone by the end of the season. Personally, I think Gibbs will move on to play regularly, and I think Jenkinson, as you say, will go on loan, possibly to Hull, by the sounds of it, in the early part of this window. This young lad plays for Hensford Town, Cohen Bramall. He's a left winger though, so I'm not sure where the link comes with a fullback, but I guess maybe he can be transitioned into playing a different position. But I think it's very much this is a 20-year-old kid who, until he's even asked a player, it doesn't really come into our thinking right now. So yeah, maybe a name to keep an eye on, maybe for you FIFA or Champ Manager people. He won't be on FIFA actually, will he? But still, okay, two more. I saw one just go through the chat box that I wanted to ask you because I thought it was very good. I'm just trying to find it from, I think it's from Mabin. Ah, yes. Which goal was better, Bergkamp's or Giroud's? I'm assuming Mabin is referring to the Bergkamp at Newcastle. And if he is, for me, that is still the best goal I've ever seen. If not, he might be referring to the one of the World Cup.
I was just going to ask you that. The question that I asked in the chat box was, what is your all-time favourite Arsenal goal?
It's that Bergkamp one against Newcastle for me.
I'm between two. I'm between the Thierry Henry one against Manchester United or the Bergkamp one. And don't get it wrong, that Giroud one, that's my top three. So that's my top three. But I can't decide between the Bergkamp one or the Thierry Henry one against Manchester United, because that goal for me, I still to this day remember I was at Highbury when he scored that, and I was with my dad, and I remember jumping up out my seat, and I think I was like, oh my God, I remember that shouting so loud, really, really loud, because for me, that was one of the best goals. And I remember sitting almost parallel to it because I was literally right where the goal was, and maybe because it was live, maybe I think it's better than it was, but for me, that Thierry Henry goal was brilliant. But that's to take away nothing from that Bergkamp goal, because to this day, I don't think there's another player that could do that, who was skillful to do that. It was just an absolute legend of a goal, like you said, Chris. It was brilliant.
Yeah, I agree. Have you got any thoughts on it, Josh? There's a few more that I can chuck into the pile. Henry's back heel against Charlton was a particularly good one. The RVP volley at Charlton as well, funnily enough, at the Valley. And the two that Robert Pires scored, one over the Southampton keeper at Highbury in a 6-1 for memory, and one that's got over Peter Schmeichel at Villa Park as well.
Wasn't that the one where Jermaine Pennant got a hat-trick?
Did he? Yeah, that's right. Yeah. Over Paul Davies, I think it was, in goal. But yeah, there's a few more that jumped to my mind. But any... Do you have a preference, Josh, of particular favourite?
The other contenders that came into my mind was the Wenger ball goal with Wilshere finishing off the move against Norwich. Yep. That's a fantastic, not necessarily individual skill goal, but just a team goal. It is absolutely incredible. But yeah, it's still going to be that Bergkamp one for me, unless I go with something like Thomas Rosicky ending Danny Rose's career. That's probably my favourite ever goal, because I love Thomas Rosicky.
I loved his...
Nothing's going to beat that.
I loved his blockbuster at White Hart Lane that year as well.
One was really good. Goal by Thomas Rosicky probably fits into my top... Well, he got, 23 goals for us, I think?
Something
wasn't many.
Like that. Yeah.
But that basically my top 23 goals for Arsenal.
Yeah. There's a couple of others. Danny's mentioned Limpar from the halfway line against Liverpool in 93, I want to say, or 92. And also the Ian Wright one where he flicks over the Everton defender.
Yes.
I can't remember his bloody name. But yeah, was it Dave Watson? I think it was. He turns him inside and outside and then volleys it across into the far corner. That was
We've also
special.
Got Rambos against Galatasaray. That's not bad.
That's not bad. Yeah, that was one. See, if I'd have been defending that, I'd have just flicked it away with the end of my cock. Just flicked it away. Just
whatever.
Podolski's volley against Montpellier in the Champions League. That was quite special as well.
His volley where he nearly kills Manuel Neuer.
Yes.
Dennis, quite good.
Do you remember Dennis's against Sunderland when he did the old celebration over Lionel Perez? He sort of rolls the ball under the sole of his foot and then just digs it out into the top corner. That was a bit special. I mean, there's hundreds, isn't there? But one of my most famous distist, or one of the abiding memories of being a youngster growing up, a goal that I went nuts for. In fact, there was two in one game. Do you remember the 3-2 over Man United? David Platt got the late-headed winner at Highbury.
Yes, and then Vieira scored as well, yeah.
Yeah, and he slid on his knees and did his bloody knee ligaments. Tit. But those two, I think the Platt goal was very late. I think it's like an 86-minute winner, and it was when United were just unbeatable. And that was a very, very good goal. That was, good times. And of course, Ray Parlour and Freddie's in the cup final. How can we leave those out? There's so many.
My favourite all-time goal is Bergkamp in the 98 World Cup against
Argentina.
To me, I don't think a better goal has been scored in world football. I know people will say, of course it is, but that was, for me, the best goal I've ever witnessed.
The commentary as well. Dennis Bergkamp, the Dutch guy. And of course, he scored a very similar one at Filbert Street the same season. I mean, where he got the hat-trick of goals on Match of the Day, his goal of the month, and all three of his goals were the three goals that got the vote. So, yeah, some good memories there. Final question then. Let's give this one to both you. Matthew Wright, would you like to play a 3-5-2 formation? What's everybody's Arsenal? We've done the favourite all-time goal. Would you like to see us play 3-5-2? Nope, not for me, because it's only a matter of time before that formation, like all the other ones, gets found out. It's been around for years, but a lot of people that are not au fait with European football seem to think that the English have invented it. We haven't. It's been around for a long, long time. Chelsea do it brilliantly. It suits their system, suits their players. Don't think it suits Arsenal's personally. We concede enough goals with four at the back for me. So not for me. Either of you two fancy it?
I don't think we haven't got the players to play it. We haven't got good enough players, I think, to play 3-5-2. So not for me.
I agree.
I disagree. We do have the players to play it, but it stifles our attack if we do. Because I think in the positions of the wingers, you'd be playing Bellerin on one side and you'd want to play someone like Kieran Gibbs on the other. You've then got probably Alexis and Giroud up front. And then you've got to try and get in one of our many central players, probably Ozil at the tip, and then someone like Xhaka and Coquelin. But it's quite a defensive system. We actually play a more offensive system with our current system because we only have three sitting back. It's different players in different positions that are sitting there.
Yeah.
We are actually in a better position to play people with the system we use, who use 3-5-2 or a 3-4-3, which is what Chelsea actually set out with.
Yeah.
Either way, you've got a better system.
I think the only way we could play it with the players we've got now, we'd still have to bring one in, in my opinion, but I think the only way you could do it now is if you played Koscielny, Mustafi, and for me, Monreal as a centre back, because he's done it before, because he's got the sense to know when to cover that left hand side, and then you play as you say, you play Bellerin as an attacking, you know, full back or wing back on right hand side. For me, you need then a proper left sided full back who's going to get up and down. I don't think personally Kieran Gibbs is at that level. And this is not a transfer-y type suggestion, but if I was to have a transfer of type to play in that formation, I don't think there's many better in world football on his day than Ricardo Rodriguez in that role on the left side of a defensive structure getting up and down personally. And he's a big physical athlete as well. So that would be what I would do if you played that. But as I say, I just think we're fine as we are, really. I'd rather what I'd love to see is I do this, Josh, you'll appreciate this comment. I do this on FIFA teams. When I first start managing a team, the first thing I do is bring in two young fullbacks, but they're both the same age. I like to have fullbacks the same age and the same sort of attributes on both sides. And I know that's not something that Arsene Wenger likes. He likes to have one side like Bellerin and one the other side like Monreal, who are two quite different types of fullbacks, both in the way they're structurally and the way they play the game. I'm a little bit against that. I quite like to have two either proper strong fullbacks or two nippy up and down fullbacks. So I'd love to see us get another Hector Bellerin through. What's Kieran Gibbs now? 26, 27, is he?
28, isn't he?
28. Is he really that old? Jesus, that's gone by quick. That would be my concern. I would rather us go out and get a... I thought we missed a trick with someone like Nathaniel Clyne, as much as I hate to say it, because although he is technically a right-back, I think he can play either side. And I'm not going to mention the obvious fullbacks of a certain team up the road from us, but that would be how I would adopt my system if I was to play attacking fullbacks. So, but I'm not going to give them any credit because they don't deserve any because they're cunts.
No, they also play two holding midfielders as well, which is why they play two attacking wing-backs. But yeah. What am I to say?
No, you're right. You're absolutely right. Yeah, you're absolutely right. Anyway, okay. Well, I think we'll draw a line there then. Good to have you all on board as usual. Thank you for those of you that have tuned in. If you do like what we do, if you wouldn't mind giving us a little thumbs up down in the bottom there on the old bar, that would be much appreciated. Makes Danny happy and makes me slightly erect. So, you know. Do it. That'll just get a thumbs down, actually. I didn't mean that. Take it back. No, we do appreciate everyone tuning in. Thank you very much for doing so. It's hugely appreciated. And I didn't really get an opportunity to say thank you to everybody for 2016, but it is now 2017. So I should just thank everyone for their efforts, including you two gentlemen, for last year. We don't plan on doing away with these. We only plan on continuing to do these. There might be a little bit of rotation in the hosts this year, because I've got lots of ships to sail and lots of gold bullion to steal. So I can't be here every week, but most weeks it'll be me and a couple of others. And we haven't forgotten all of you lovely people that want to come on the show. It's a little bit difficult to get all of you on because we do have a regular panel and it's a nightmare to organise as it is. So getting without getting new people on, but we will see what we can do when we get the opportunity.
Chris, we've got domestic in the chat room. So
I know, yes. We've got a Dally and daughter fight going on here. So yeah, they can just fight it out. Apparently, Sean is shit at Scrabble. We should mention that before we go. So, but yes, check out the podcast. I think it was Dom, OG, Jace, and Danny on Thursday. So have a listen to that. I'm still haven't caught up, but I will do it at some point this evening. And I think Jeff is planning to bring the blogs back. I think it's next week, or is it? It is Sunday, isn't it? I've lost all track of days. So yeah, next week, I think Jeff is planning to bring the blogs back. And as far as I know, Gimli is back as of normal, as of next week. So yeah, keep tuned in. We appreciate it. We'll be back after Bournemouth. Not a clue who will be here, but somebody will be here. So so tune in then. But until then, thank you very much to Josh and to Carl.
No worries. Pleasure, as always.
Thank you very much. Always nice to commentate on a win.
Oh, yes. Happy days. Had a clean sheet. Woohoo. And our thanks, as always, to all of you in the chat box, including even you, Danny. For once, you don't have to be here. Thank you very much for listening. Thanks for bearing with us in a bit of a hastily put together show, but we appreciate it, as always. We will speak to you after Bournemouth and hopefully another 3 points. Have a jolly nice 2017 beginning, and we'll speak to you all very soon. Ta-ta.
Bye.
Hey, Jude, don't make it bad. Take a sad song and make it better. Remember to let her into your heart. Then you can start to make it better. Hey Jude, don't be afraid. You were made to go out and get her. The minute you let her under your skin, then you begin to make it better. And anytime you feel Sad song.